6 points under the auspices of, well, from KPFA in Berkeley under the auspices of the Pacifica Network. That's, we're going to follow that at 11 with Pacific Underground, featuring anti-fascist activist Scott Nakagawa talking about the rise of call-out culture. This kind of thing, this is what's possible when friends and neighbors all get together to make something wonderful. And that's what many of your friends and neighbors have already done, and what you can do too at kboo.fm/give, or just kboo.fm and click on the word donate. Next, Flashpoints, right after these important community announcements. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the fundraiser for Sierra Leone, hosted by Surge and Restore, on Saturday, April 29 at 6 p.m. at the Carveland Hall at St. Mary Church in Portland. This night includes the screening of a documentary film, refreshments, a raffle, and live music by Ojos Feos, Ripe Red Apple, and Michelle DeCourcy. Again, that's the fundraiser for Sierra Leone, hosted by Surge and Restore, on Saturday, April 29th at 6 p.m. at the Carveland Hall at St. Mary Church, 1636 Southeast Hickory Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Lonesome City EP release, Saturday, April 29th at the Alberta Street Pub in Portland. The event celebrates the debut solo EP release from Avery Levine. Avery Levine is a Portland-based singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist specializing in traditional Irish music and original progressive Irish folk. Again, that's the Lonesome City EP release, Saturday, April 29th, from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Alberta Street Pub, 1036 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. First up on the show today, we hear from longtime Chicano Mexican-American activist Nativo Lopez commenting on Trump's first 100 days and a protest coming up on May Day. Listen to this.
Okay, my name is Nativo Lopez. I'm political and legal advisor to the Hermandad Mexicana, the original founded organization in 1951. That began as a result of the Operation Wetback, massive deportations in the early 1950s, and we're still here today fighting deportations under the Trump administration. I not only represent the Hermandad Mexicana, but also the California Congreso Latino, which is an umbrella group that put together the first call for a general strike for May Day, to repudiate the immigration policies of the Trump administration, but along the line, other policies that he's pursuing with regard to the budget, with regard to the environment, with regard to banning Muslims, and now edging on other countries for another war and the prolongation of the existing wars. So the demands that have been raised by the California Congreso Latino and the May Day General Strike Coalition in Los Angeles are legalization for all, stop deportations, no to the border wall, and no to Bracero programs, and no to more wars. That's what we're organizing around. Yesterday we had a unified press conference with all of the May Day coalitions, including labor, including the funded immigrant rights organizations such as CHIRLA that have now become government agencies providing services to immigrants, but it was a united press conference and a call for unity between all of the coalitions and organizations to come out and take the streets on May Day in a general strike, a day without immigrants, and we're expecting a very large turnout here in Southern California.
I want to talk to you a little bit about, you're somebody we like to talk about the big picture and what the policy looks like at the macro. We know in the back rooms, these guys like Sessions, really lifetime racists, white supremacists, they really want to purge as many brown people. Do you see it that way? It's sort of like an ethnic cleansing. Would you talk about that?
Well, I don't have any major differences with that observation, but I would say that it's not just characteristic of this administration, a Republican administration. Fact of the matter is it's a continuation of what we experienced of 8 years under the Obama administration, of the Democratic administration under the Democratic Party. And so immigrants find themselves caught between a rock and a hard place, between Tweedledee and Tweedledum, enforcement, quasi-light enforcement heavy under Attorney General Jeff Sessions and the Trump administration. But it's truly a continuation of the policies that were enacted and used under the previous administration. It seems like the Trump administration, however, is moving forward on steroids, the practices that were pursued under Obama. And by this measure alone indicates to us that it's immigration enforcement on steroids. Under the Obama administration, there was a 100-mile zone from the southern border into the interior of the United States that if an individual was detained, suspected of not having immigration status, and could not prove up that he had been in the country more than 2 days, he could basically be detained and removed from the country without even having, without even going before an immigration judge, not having an opportunity to retain attorney. Essentially, his due process rights were eliminated. Under the Trump administration, the executive order that was released, he essentially expanded that 100-mile zone to coast-to-coast, border-to-border, completely in the interior, anywhere in the country where a person could be detained and would have to prove up that they had been in the country at least 24 months, and if they couldn't, they could then be detained and removed again, completely eliminating their due process rights. So it truly is enforcement on steroids. That's what we're facing. We call it 100 days of neo-fascism, as that applies to immigrants, 100 days of resistance.
Could you talk about the... You mentioned the Bracero program, and people don't know history. You say you've seen this before. Could you say a little bit more about that? I know my partner here, Miguel Gavilán Molina, watched his dad dragged out and beaten in the 50s. Could you explain this, how there is a continuity here?
Absolutely. The Bracero program, as it was dubbed back in 1942, an agreement between the United States and Mexico to provide workers, Mexican workers, to the United States, not only to work in agriculture, but to work in an important industry as the railroad industry throughout the United States. Some 3 million to 4 million Mexican migrant guest workers, contracted workers, were brought into the United States to work in these industries. And that program lasted from 1942 to 1964. It was essentially a servitude labor contracting system that still exists today in much lower numbers. There's approximately 50,000 such workers that are contracted in that manner on an annual basis under an H-2 program. And our view is essentially, or our theory with regard to the kind of enforcement that this administration is conducting, is to hit real hard on the immigrant community, particularly the Mexican workers, the Central American workers, and then eventually we will see some type of legislation move through Congress proposed by Republicans that would essentially enact a form of guest worker program for massive number of workers. For example, it's estimated that 11,000 undocumented workers are in the country today. So our theory is that they will propose that 11 million workers, if they want to regularize their status and obtain permanent residency status, that they would have to be in a guest worker type program for 5, 7, 10 years, after which, and if they have a complete clean record, violated no laws, paid all their taxes, after which they would be invited to leave the United States, apply for permanent resident status, and then return back into the United States after paying a hefty fine of over $1,000 for their sin of having originally entered the United States unlawfully. If you beat someone up 2 years running, 3 years running, and then you turn around and offer them something apparently benign to have temporary status, a work permit, a social security number, the people are obviously going to be apt to jump at that opportunity after they've been beaten up and terrorized for two or more years. So it's our theory that this is where this administration is headed, because it absolutely knows that it depends on immigrant labor, cheap immigrant labor, to work in very important segments of the economy of the United States that are producing, whereas manufacturing is being reduced, service employment is increasing. That's where we find immigrant labor. In agriculture, nobody can deny that it's immigrant labor that that plays a vital role of producing a bountiful harvest for California and for the country.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Nativa Lopez. He's a spokesperson for Hermandad Mexicana. He's a longtime Chicano Mexican American activist on the front lines, telling the truth about what's been happening for so many years. Nativa, I'd like you to address the concept of sanctuary. We're talking about sanctuary cities, sanctuary states. Do you think it's effective? Do you support it? How does that come into this for you?
The concept of sanctuary is basically a religious, a church concept where someone could be protected on the property of the church. It's based in canon law. But what we came to know of sanctuary status or sanctuary cities, certainly during the 1980s, during the Civil War in El Salvador, and many churches opened up their doors to permit Salvadorian refugees to be protected in those areas that were essentially recognized by the immigration authorities at that time as areas that they would not seek to enter to detain individuals that didn't have status. This has now been repopularized under the Trump administration, although I have to be real honest with you, where was the church or the churches raising this demand under the Obama administration that deported nearly 3 million individuals, doing the very same thing that the Trump administration is doing? So in that sense, it's somewhat partisan, but let's say, okay, that's fine. At least they're coming out for partisan reasons. But many churches now and advocacy organizations and legislators and Democratic politicians are calling for cities to declare themselves sanctuary. Effectively, what it means in the practical sense is that to the full extent of the concept and the theory of sanctuary is that government authorities will not allow policing agencies or other agencies of the government to cooperate with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement arm of the Department of Homeland Security for the purpose of detaining and deporting individuals, residents of the state of California. In that regard, it is a measure of protection. However, government authorities at the state level have no power to prevent federal authorities of executing warrants of detention or simply just seeking to detain individuals based on their suspicion that the individual does not have status. In that sense, Hermandad Mexicana, the California Congreso Latino, we support the effort for cities to declare themselves sanctuary. There's legislation in the legislature of California called SB 54 that would essentially declare California, doesn't have the language, but in effect it would declare California a sanctuary state, because it would prohibit the use of any public funds by any government entity, police, sheriffs, Department of Public Social Service, or any other, to cooperate with ICE in the detention and deportation of individuals. It's a buffer, if you will. There's a lot of opposition to that legislation by the Sheriff's Association of California, and we essentially have called on communities that are facing sheriffs or policing authorities that continue to cooperate with ICE to no longer cooperate with those policing authorities, to no longer be complicit with those policing authorities as they continue to be complicit or openly cooperate with ICE in the detention and the deportation of members of our families. So in concept and theory, and as a political demand, sanctuary for all, sanctuary city, sanctuary state, is very, very good. It helps rally and bring together people of like mind that seek to protect immigrants. But effectively, state authorities cannot prevent federal authorities from executing warrants of detention.
What do you think? Do you see there have been a number of arrests of people who were supposedly safe from being arrested under Obama or under Trump, for that matter. And they're saying that there's direct retaliation for people who have spoken out for undocumented folks and others who are fighting this good fight, fighting for the rights of brown people, for the people who do some of the hardest work in this country, as you say, put the food on the table. Do you see are you hearing about examples of retaliation for activism? You're no stranger to that, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm not a stranger to that, but I'm still here and I'm still standing.
This is good.
They never knocked me down.
This is good.
Like Jake LaMotta told Sugar Ray Robinson, "You never knocked me down, Ray. You never knocked me down." So we're still here in the fight, right? Well, and so we have heard of cases that there have been retaliation by ICE forces throughout the country. Not an abundant number of cases, but with one case alone is sufficient to tag the administration with being retaliatory.